Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Anything Goes. I'm your host, Bilal Ali, and today I have a very special episode for you guys. But before we get into that, I gotta say something that I don't say too often, and that's if you guys could please go and leave a review and rate on Apple Podcasts and or Podchaser, that would be greatly appreciated. And follow the podcast on Instagram at Podcast with Bilal. But yeah, so for today, I am joined by a very special guest. He is an Olympian, a businessman, a husband, and I mean, you know, he's kind of done it all. But the main reason, you know, that he's on here, all those things are pretty cool, but the real reason he's on here is because he's my coach. That's the coolest thing of of them all. So let's hear it for Brandon O'Neill. Welcome on, Brandon.
Oh, thank you for having me. I was, listening to those that introduction, I was going to say the most important thing is that I am your coach. So thank you for for stating that. So
thank you. Yeah, thank you for coming on.
Of all my accomplishments, you are top of my list.
See, guys, that says a lot right there, because you know, the Olympics, that's huge, and you know, having your own business and all that, but
you know I thought I'm it the was top. and then you walked into my life, and
that's great to hear. But yeah, so I guess before we start, Brandon, do you want to introduce yourself real quick, kind of to the audience and listeners?
Yeah, my name's Brandon O'Neill. I am a Canadian Olympian for the sport of gymnastics. I did gymnastics from the age of 3 all the way up until I was 27 when I retired. I run a gymnastics competitive program, which Bilal is involved with. And I also run a business with my wife selling a cosmetics beauty brand called Buff Experts.
Amazing. See, guys, like I said, he's kind of done it all. You know, not so many people can say, you know, that they reached the highest level that you can reach in you know, any sport, basically. But before, I guess, we start, Brandon, would you like to also say what year you went to the Olympics in?
I competed in the 2008 Olympics in Beijing, China.
Awesome. Yeah, so I know everybody is going to be anticipating, you know, the questions that are about the Olympics, you know, and stuff like that. But I guess, you know, it would make sense to start off, you know, this episode from the start of your life, kind of, you know, your childhood and stuff like that, and your upbringing. So would you kind of mind telling us a little bit about, you know, how that upbringing was?
Yeah, so I was born and raised in Edmonton. My parents were pretty young when they had us. I have two brothers, an older brother and a younger brother, so I'm the middle child. And yeah, my parents were pretty young when they had us. My grandparents were heavily involved in our lives, and my grandmother was actually the one who put me in gymnastics when I was 3 and really took control of, you know, us kids being in sports and making sure that we had sport as a positive influence in our lives. And yeah, I was a very quiet, introverted kid. I was not, you know, surprisingly, gymnastics was like my main focus in life. I really didn't care about too much else going on as I was growing up and getting older. And, you know, I think that's one of the reasons why I managed to have the success I had, was just, you know, how much gymnastics meant to me. And just, you know, that's all I ever thought about. That's all I ever cared to do. And, you know, looking back, it's crazy. But
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. That is definitely, you know, some dedication, you know, extreme dedication to the sport, you know. And you obviously, you know, you graduated high school and stuff like that, right? But you know, were you still kind of how did you kind of, I guess, differentiate, you know, the time between school and training and stuff like that, although your focus was mainly on, you know, gym?
You know, it's now that I'm older too, and like your parents have a lot to do with what, you know, you kind of gravitate towards, what you put emphasis on in life. And to be honest, my parents were very laid back. They weren't too involved with my schooling, even my gymnastics. As I mentioned, my grandparents put me in it. So, and my parents themselves never went to post-secondary school. So I think that had a large influence on just how the importance I put on schooling. Not that it wasn't important, but looking back, I, you know, now that I'm older, I definitely would have loved to put a little more effort into my schooling. But as I said, when I was growing up, you know, gymnastics was everything to me, and that's like what I thought about all day, every day. So
I definitely agree, you know, in the fact that, you know, parents and the people around you kind of are you know, the main driving force, you know, in a way, to what you do in the future, kind of, you know. But so I guess, you know, before we finally get into, you know, the gymnastics career and stuff like that, the people around you, you know, your friends and stuff like that, were they, you know, also heavily into sports or gymnastics in particular, or were they, you know, what type of friends?
It seems pretty common, especially in the gymnastics world, that you, I mean, I spent as much time in the gym as I did in school. So the people I hung out with growing up were primarily the kids that I trained with every day. Going through, as I mentioned, that I was a really introverted kid, so I didn't talk very much. So especially through grade, you know, junior high into high school, I only had a couple close friends, as, you know, I just wasn't around school very long and I wasn't very social. So it was tough, you know, meeting people. And really, to be honest, like, I didn't care that much. So, yeah, definitely the people in the gymnastics community were like the main friends in my life.
Yeah. Who were your role models growing up? Because I know, you know, it's kind of a funny question to ask you, because now, you know, a lot of people may, you know, especially in the gymnastics community and stuff like that, you know, they may look up to you as, you know, their role model, especially your athletes and whatnot, right? So it's definitely, it's a funny question to ask now, you know, how you know, the people that shaped you into becoming basically a role model for other people. Who are those?
To be honest, you know, anybody in sport, if you're training and you're a younger athlete, if you're around athletes who are just older than you doing more impressive things, you're going to look up to them. So not that these athletes were super amazing or had like great careers or anything, but just the older athletes at my club who trained, and I would always look up to them because they were doing higher level skills. And then as I got older, to be honest, I looked up to people, but they became my competitors really quick. So while I saw positive traits in them, like I was thinking about how I could beat them. So I didn't have a lot of role models, to be honest, in that regard.
Wow, yeah, that's definitely actually, you know, interesting how, you know, you built that competitive, you know, nature, kind of, it was built in you in a way, you know, from the beginning, from the start. So yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. But you mentioned earlier that your grandma, she put you into gymnastics, right?
She did. She put me in when I was 3 years old. And that's another thing, based on, you know, experiences in life and my parents, my mother, it's my mom's mother, my grandmother, yeah, who put me in gymnastics. And I don't think they had, my mom and her mom, I don't think they had a great relationship growing up. And I think my grandparents thought, you know, maybe they didn't do things like properly the right way. Like, I'm sure every grandparent looks back and was treats their grandchild differently than they do their own kid, right? Because, you know, they've learned so many things. And I think one of those things my grandparents learned were that kids needed to be in something, to be doing something, to, you know, give them an outlet that, like, outside of school. And also, so, you know, they're not spending their extra time getting into trouble and stuff like that. So while I was only three and I was flipping around and had all this excess energy that needed to be burned off, they knew they wanted to put me in sport in general just to, you know, give me something outside of school to be a positive influence.
Yeah, that's definitely, you know, great of your grandparents, you know, that they thought about that, because, you know, I feel that it is really important, honestly, you know, for all the reasons that you mentioned, to kind of be in sports, or not even, you know, only in sports, you know, for some people they're not athletic, right? But kind of just having some outlet, you know, to spend your time in, especially when you're, like, growing up as youth, right? Because then, so you don't get into trouble, like you said.
Yeah, exactly. And with a lot of kids, and, you know, you go to school, you meet people, but it could be hard, like, making friends and stuff because, you know, everybody's so different. But then you go to a sport and everybody's there for a common purpose, right? So everybody has already a same interest. And so you can maybe bond a little bit easier with people in those kind of environments. So I think that's really important too.
Yeah, absolutely. For me, you know, when I was put into gymnastics, I was put into it pretty late, you know, when I was like 10. But what happened was, basically, I used to always do parkour around, you know, the parks and stuff like that. And my parents, they were, you know, worried, because I was watching videos on YouTube and then, you know, going and trying to copy the people and all this, you know. So they were worried I was going to, like, crack my head and injure myself and all that. So they tried to find some parkour classes. They couldn't. So then they thought, you know, the closest thing to it would be gymnastics. And, yeah, so, I mean, with trying to say that, what was kind of the reasoning that your grandparents, you know, maybe thought about choosing, you know, gymnastics over some other sports?
Yeah, I think my grandmother had seen gymnastics on television and was just aware of it. And, you know, I'm not too sure. My dad was a hockey player for a long time, and I was always going to the rink and stuff. And,
oh, yeah,
you know, you'd think that I would have been put in a sport like that, hockey or soccer or something. But yeah, to this day, I'm not too sure. But I think it was mostly because I was flipping and somersaulting around at home. And, you know, it's just, you know, that's gymnastics, right? So yeah, she put me in it and I just took off from there with it and loved it. So it was hard pulling me out after that. Although she did try over the years, she did try to get me to do other things, because, you know, she is my number one fan, always was, but she was actually scared for me as I got older, and because of some of the things I was doing. And she used to videotape my competitions, and, you know, the audio on those videos would just be her going like, oh my God, oh my God. So, you know, she loved that I was doing it. She loved that I was great at it, but, you know, she had a really hard time watching it. She would get more stressed out than me, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So she tried putting me in karate. She tried putting me in trampoline. She tried having me do a few other things, but, you know, nothing kept my interest like gymnastics did.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, it's good that she, I guess, you know, made the right decision in the beginning, you know, of putting you in gymnastics, and, you know, you went far in it, extremely far, obviously. And for anybody who wants to see, you know, some of Brandon's you know, gymnastics, it's on YouTube. If you search up Brandon O'Neill gymnastics and stuff like that, you'll see, you know, Brandon, he's such a beast, you know. So you guys can check some of his videos out and see why, you know, his grandma would go, whoa, and all that, right? So,
oh, I wish back when I was competing, video phones and were so common just because the quality of videos and just how many I would have. I don't have a lot of videos of my youth competing, and now I look at the generation today and they're blessed in a way that, they can capture every moment so easily on their phones that, there's a lot of stuff where I think about where, there's no photos, there's no documentation, there's nothing of that. So it's all in my memory, so.
Yeah, it's definitely crazy actually to think about how like now we're growing up and this generation is filled all with social media and electronics and it's at our disposal really easily. And then you think back, literally like a generation or two ago, it would have not been as common, so it's definitely a blessing.
I mean, it was only as little as 15 years ago, right? I
Yeah,
remember
right.
at the Olympics, Bell is our phone carrier in Canada, and they sponsor the Canadian team. So everybody gets a free phone when you go to the Olympics. And it wasn't a video phone or anything like that. It was just a regular old, button phone. So just a few years after with iPhones and stuff. So it's crazy how quickly technology took off.
Yeah, definitely, it really is. What was kind of the effort like, to become so good at a sport like gymnastics? 'Cause personally, I train 16 hours, although with COVID right now, I don't know what I even train.
Zero.
no, Renny, can't say that. I come to the online training sometimes. It's a little bit, hard with like
Yeah.
motivation and all that. But yeah, what?
At this time in this for this podcast, we're in another shutdown here in Edmonton. So hopefully this is the final one, but yeah, it's hard on the kids for sure because there's no sports. A lot of businesses are shut down now for a few weeks, so it's a boring time.
Yeah. It really is. It's May 12th right now when I'm recording this with Brandon. But yeah, so what was kind of, I guess, like I said, the effort and that amount of work you had to put in to become so good?
From an early age, I again was really committed to gymnastics. And I look back, my grandmother kept a scrapbook of all my accomplishments and stuff throughout the years. And she has one page where it was a cutout from a journal in grade one. And in the journal, I was already writing about how I was going to go to the Olympics.
Wow.
So, I mean, that's crazy. But, it's just going in talent and naturally being talented. I mean, that's a large part of anybody in sport. And I was blessed with, being the right size and, having the right abilities. But, it's just loving the sport, going in every day. I mean, that you train and working hard and, being committed. That's all you can do. And there's so many different factors that go into, there's so many great athletes who, for whatever reason, whether it's injury or in gymnastics, say judging or some external factors that come into play that, could prevent a guy who was better than the next from not being able to go to these big competitions. So a lot of it is luck. And yeah, I was certainly very fortunate with my career.
Yeah, I mean, you are also very talented, so it's definitely a blessing. And I know, obviously you, like you said, you mentioned, and it's something that you obviously would have to have. Any athlete who has gone to the Olympics and went on the world's biggest stage and all that, you obviously had to love the sport really, really much. But did you ever feel kind of like you were missing out on things, because of how much time you had to spend in the gym? Or was it always, just you were always happy whenever you were in the gym?
Oh, I was always happy when I was in the gym, but and this is an age where I think a lot of kids in sport in general pivot and maybe move on to something else. And this was at the end of grade 8, so I was, I don't know, maybe 13 or 14. And I had a couple guys my age who were also in my classes at school, and they trained with me. And at the end of grade eight, they decided that they were going to be quitting and, you know, moving on to other things. And, you know, I felt a lot of pressure because they were my friends to follow them. And, you know, so I actually, we all went into my coach's office and we all said that we were quitting. So there was a brief time where, you know, I almost let peer pressure, you know, affect and make decisions for me. But I had a meeting with my coach afterwards, one-on-one, and he told me to take some time to think about it. And sure enough, within a couple weeks, I was back in the gym again. So that was probably the only time that I really felt like I was missing out. And a large part of that wasn't so much that maybe in high school, like, I would use excuses of gym to maybe not go to parties or something, but I think it had a lot more to do with just being as introverted as I was. And you know, so if I wasn't so introverted, I think I would have cared more, but because I was, I think that really helped my focus with gym and, you know, not let maybe missing out on things outside of gym, you know, get me down, because, you know, I let it kind of go pretty easily.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Peer pressure is definitely, you know, a hard thing. And what kind of, I guess, brought you back when you took that time to think? Was it the love for the sport again, or?
Yeah, for sure. And when I was 14, I was really taking off. Like, I was starting to get results. I was qualifying for the nationals, and I was doing really well. So, I mean, add to the fact that I did love the sport, and, you know, after you train, you know, 16 hours at least a week, maybe even more, and then you quit and you're only 14, and then now you have all this extra time at home, and I just don't think I knew what to do with myself either. So, like I said, it was a pretty short-lived mini retirement. So, definitely wasn't hard for me to make the comeback.
Yeah, yeah. Can you tell us about, you know, some of your, you know, amazing competitions that you attended? You know, besides the Olympics, you know, we haven't really reached there yet, but, you know, just kind of, I guess, your other competitions that you've done, your travels, everything, you know. Just tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I'll talk about my career prior to the Olympics for sure.
Okay.
But so I started, one of the big moments of my career early on was I had the same coaches up until I was about 11 years old, and I don't know how far they would have been able to take me as an athlete later in life. And our head coach at the time actually received a job offer to start a gymnastics club at the University of Alberta. So he took that job opportunity. And although he asked my grandmother if I would follow him, for whatever reason, I'm not too sure, she said, no, we're going to stay at the gymnastics club, is called Capital City, where I was at. She said, no, we're going to stay there. And Capital City brought in a coach who would, you know, best coach I had. He was a former Chinese national athlete, and he was coaching out of Lethbridge at the time, Lethbridge, Alberta. And
what was his name?
His name is Jun Chen. So he came to Edmonton, and he had a clear idea of what it takes and what plans to implement to make sure that, you know, his athletes could progress and make it to the highest levels. So from then on, like, up until I was 11 years old, I think I have this memory of only winning maybe one medal at competitions. So I didn't really have much success early on in my life. But from then on, like I just took off. So I think
Wow.
a lot of that is owed to June. So over the years, started getting better. My first international competition was in a small town in France, actually. And how that came about was, so locally, every gymnastics club, they have their coaches. Then you go to nationals and everybody's competing against everybody. Everybody has their own coaches. But once you get to the highest level, there's one specific coach, and he that gets to be the head coach of Canada. So when you make Team Canada and you go to training camps, you go to the highest level competitions, the head coach kind of oversees the program. And then all your individual coaches, I mean, you have to listen to the head coach. So Canada at the time brought in a new guy. His name is Edward Yarov, and he was from Kazakhstan, and he had coached an Olympic champion years before.
Wow.
And so they brought this guy in to kind of overhaul the Canadian gymnastics program to try and, you know, start getting Canada some success. So when he came in, he had coached in France for a number of years as well. So he brought this competition that's hosted in France brought it up to June, my coach. And so we went. It was called the Tournament of Five Continents. So it sounds pretty big, sounds pretty like a big deal. But when we went, there were not five continents there. There were not many people there at all. But, it was my first. It was my first experience competing against some other countries. And, you know, there was athletes from China, Belgium, France. So there were some, and for a guy who's never been outside of Canada, it was a pretty big deal. And there I managed to win gold on the floor. So, I mean, right from the get-go, I was already having success, especially on the floor exercise, which was my expertise. So then, going on from there, we have different levels in gymnastics, and the two highest levels, if you're between 16 and 18, there's a category called junior, and once you're 18, you move into senior category, which is the highest level.
Yeah.
And I was in junior at the time, so trying to get more experience, and my coach, being from China, there was a competition in Taiwan at the end of 1 year. And so we went there next, and this was a much higher level competition, and I was competing against, you know, guys from Europe and Romania. There were more guys from Canada who went, so it was a larger deal for sure. And I had made the finals on the floor, and I made mistakes in the finals, so I didn't place well in the finals, but just gaining a lot of experience and trying to be able to deal with the pressure of, you know, going out and having to do not just one routine, but several routines through qualifications and finals, and trying to be consistent and, you know, being able to do a really good routine over and over again, right?
Yeah.
So that was pretty cool. And I was about 17 at the time. And this was also one of my first experiences with gymnastics after parties. So now I was old enough where I could go out and have fun with everybody.
Oh yeah.
And this competition happened to be over New Year's as well. So there was this giant, giant party. And again, I had not really been to many parties in my life, and I definitely didn't partake in the drinking side of things. But when you're with, you know, Romanians and Russians and all these different countries, and they're all having fun and they're all passing you things, let's just say some mistakes were made. So there were definitely some lessons learned on that trip. And when I got home, I got in some trouble. So, but so that was a pretty fond memory that I have of that trip. But yeah, from there, you know, again, I kept going internationally. 2002 was a really big year. There was a large competition called the Commonwealth Games, and it's basically a mini Olympics but it's for all the Commonwealth nations. And I was still in the junior category at the time, and you had to be senior to compete it or try it to make the team. And my coach thought I had a chance at making it. So he bumped me up categories for the national championships, and I competed senior for the first time. And whenever you're going to try and qualify as a team, or qualify onto a team for these big competitions, they usually have a list of criteria. And one of the criteria to be on this team is if you place in the top three overall at the national championships, you'd be guaranteed to go to the Commonwealth Games. So Sport in general is a pretty political thing. So this was a pretty big deal. And if you could get in the top three, like, then you're, you know, you're there, right? So yeah. I was competing. I was doing pretty well. And then my first experience with, you know, somebody kind of trying to play mind games with you a little bit. Like, I was getting ready to go on the high bar, and I think it was my last event, and I was doing pretty well. And right before the judges were calling me, one of the athletes' coaches came up and started a conversation with me. And I didn't think much of the time or in the moment. And sure enough, broke my focus enough. And I don't know 100% that he was trying to do that. But when I went up, of course, I missed one of my skills. I fell. And then I ended up fourth all round. So I just missed out on that top three. So now, over the next couple months, I had to go through all the trials. There were training camps. There were other competitions that, you know, we had to decide the other three. And I stayed in the mix. And then we went to England in a small town called Lillishall. And that's where they have their national training center in England. And there we were still training. They hadn't finalized the team yet. And, you know, I just training so hard and putting so much effort in, I ended up not getting picked for the team. I was picked as the alternate. So so that was pretty disappointing. But the alternate got to go to the games. I had to stay at someone's house in Manchester. It was in Manchester, England. And I stayed at a family's house. I occasionally went into the athletes' village and spent time with the guys, and I watched the competitions and everything. So it was really, I mean, I was only 17, so it was a really good learning experience.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I walked away from that with a fractured wrist. And one thing that I really learned, too, is just, especially as young guys, like the head coach, he's there to, you know, get the best result. And he's going to push the athletes as hard as he can. And the young guys especially, you know, there's like fear, right? Because you want to make the team, you don't really know any better, so you're going to do everything that, you know, this guy tells you. And I think a lot of times it worked out for him, and we had a lot of good results, but, I mean, there were a lot of injuries over, you know, the 8-10 year cycle that he was the head coach, just because...
Wow.
You know, you're pushing yourself so hard all the time that, you know, things happen, especially at the highest levels. So I went home, you know, the wrist healed, everything, you know, training went along fine. And then the following year was a huge year, because there were the World Championships. And every year, the World Championships before the Olympics is where you qualify as a team to the Olympics. So Canada, there were two large competitions that year in 2003. There were the World Championships, and one team would be going to that. And then there were the Pan American Games, which are all the, you know, American countries, North America, South America, Central America. And that was kind of like the Commonwealth Games, but a bit of a smaller scale. So I didn't make the team to the Worlds that year, but I went to the Pan American Games. And when I went there, you know, it was pretty cool. But being from Edmonton, you know, I'm a redhead. I'm really pale. I never went in the sun, really. I didn't do much outside. and this competition and my parents, we never went on vacations or anything. So never been anywhere hot, but this competition was in the Dominican Republic. Oh. So me being a 17-year-old, like clueless kid, I took, you know, jeans and, you know, all this regular clothing. And then I get there and it's, you know, 30 degrees and I'm walking around in like black jeans. And fortunately they, I mean, Team Canada, they give you a bunch of clothing and stuff. So, I mean, I had some shorts and stuff, but just how oblivious I was to like the rest of the world. And you know, it's crazy. And then competing in that kind of heat, I mean, all the facilities were open air, so it wasn't air conditioned, stuff like that. Like, it was quite the experience. And then the judges too, there was this moment where the judges went on strike in the middle of competition because they hadn't been paid. So for a while there, all the athletes were just sitting there because the judges wouldn't judge anything. And then a sudden, these people, like officers, army, like they came marching in with suitcases of cash to pay off these judges. It was ridiculous. And then sure enough, they get their money. The competition goes on. And I made the finals on the floor. And I went on to win the gold medal on the floor exercise. And why this was so cool was this was, I mean, one, the gold medal, but two, it was Canada's first gold medal of the games. And anytime, whether it's the Olympics or any games, usually they make a big deal out of the first gold medal. So, I think the second gold medal was won by somebody else, but literally minutes after I won mine. But because I won mine first, you know, I had so many interviews I had to do. I was on the front page of the papers back home. Like, it was it was crazy. And so that was a pretty cool experience. I, again, in the scrapbook that my grandmother saved for me, I mean, I have the front page of the newspaper where it's just my giant face blown up.
That's amazing.
On the front page. And it says Canada's Golden Boy. So it's pretty cool. Ooh.
Wow, yeah. that's amazing.
Yeah, and then from there, the next, or I should say 2003, there was the World Championships, which I wasn't selected to, but the team qualified to go to the Olympics. So going into the 2004, it was a really big year because, you know, this was my first shot at trying out for a Canadian Olympic team, right? So yeah, it was a lot of pressure. Again, only being 18, 19 at the time, I was still pretty young. I was still not reaching my peak yet. And I just missed out on making the team to the Olympics in 2004. So while it was pretty disappointing at the time, you know, I knew that, you know, I was only going to get better and I was going to stick with it. So, going into that year, I watched Kyle Schufelt, who was a competitor of mine, go on to win the Olympic gold medal on the floor exercise, actually. So that was pretty cool. And then that kind of also lit a fire where it's like, you know, if he could do it, you know, why can't I, right?
Right.
So then over the next 4 years leading up to Beijing, where it was really where my career took off. And 2005 was like probably the best year of my career. I won every competition leading up to the World Championships on the floor exercise. So I was really focused on the floor. I went to 3 World Cup competitions. I went to a Pan American Championship, which was a qualifier for the Pan American Games, which I had gone to a few years earlier. I won the University Games floor. So the national championships, like I was winning meet after meet after meet on the floor and I was feeling really good. So then I was selected to be the only male competitor from Canada to go to the World Championships in Australia that year. And how it works is every year there's a World Championships and every fourth year there's an Olympics. So there's no World Championships the year of the Olympics. And then every year after the Olympics is the World Championships, but it's only for individuals, not for teams. So every athlete that goes is a specialist in some way. So they're going to be, you know, the champion on one event, two events, or as an all-rounder to be, you know, yeah, an all-round champion.
Yeah.
So I went, that's why Canada only sent myself and then one female. Her name is Elise Hoffner Hibbs. So it was just the two of us from Canada, me representing the men, Elise representing the women. So we went to Australia, first ever world championship experience. So I should have been pretty nervous, but you know, there wasn't a lot of pressure really because it wasn't part of a team. I was just there for myself and I had already had so much success earlier in the year that I was feeling quite confident. So going into the competition, how it works is there's qualifications, and if you're in the top eight after the qualification, then you get to compete days later in the finals. And I went out, I competed, I had a good routine, I landed out of bounds, and that took some points off. So I was a little uncertain of, you know, if my score would be able to hold up throughout the day because, you know, now at the World Championships, you know, there's upwards of 100 people competing on that event. So to be top eight is, you know, quite difficult.
Amazing.
So then as the day went on, I ended up being tied for fourth with that mistake. So I was pretty happy. I felt pretty confident because, you know, if I go out in the finals and I don't make any mistakes, I'll have a shot at a medal.
Yeah.
And so the finals came. I was third up in order. And the first guy who went up, he was world medalist, Olympic medalist. He was an older athlete, but he was one of the best in the world. And he went out and he made a large mistake right away. So that kind of got me thinking like, oh, okay, this guy was probably one of my main competitors and he already made a mistake. So, you know, I just have to go out, hit my routine, do what I can do. And then, so I went up third, had a great routine, small step on my final tumbling pass. So I felt really good. At the time, I was ranked first after I went. So I was only the third up, so I was ranked first. So there were five guys after me still to go. And I sat back and I watched as guy after guy competed and guy after guy, I stayed in first place all the way until the very last competitor. And the last competitor was a guy from Brazil named Diego Hippolito. And he had actually competed against me. He had actually competed against me in the Pan American Games in the Dominican Republic where I won. So I had already been competing against him for a couple years. And he went out, he had a great routine as well. And, you know, it was virtually identical to mine. And then it was up to the judges, really. Yeah. And then when his score came up, it was back then, gymnastics scores were scored out of a 10. So if you had all the difficulty you could have, you would start out of a 10, and then the judges would deduct from there. So I scored a 9.625 and out of a 10. Wow. And then Diego's score flashed, and he scored a 9.675. So he scored 0.05 higher than me. And so he took the gold medal and I got the silver. But, you know, it was a pretty special moment. And there were only two other Canadians ever to get a silver medal at a World Championships. Nobody has ever won gold. So it's, you know, it's pretty special that, you know, I'm one of those guys.
Definitely. So, You really did, you know, things that a lot of people could not do. And like, you know, you said that you won the first gold medal at the Pan American Games for Canada, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
It was the first medal of the games, yeah. I'm not sure it was the first gold medal for Canada ever, obviously not, but yes.
Yeah, so you know, you like paved the way for a lot of other athletes in that competition in particular. But yeah.
Oh, I think so. And, you know, especially 2005 with all those successes that I had, like now I became a role model for a lot of athletes. And then from that moment on, going to World Cups, going to big competitions, because I had all this success, no matter what country you went to, people who were there watching knew who I was. So I was a bit of a celebrity in a way, and I would always, I'd always give out autographs and stuff like that. So it was a pretty cool experience over the next few years competing at, you know, at the top of the sport. It was pretty neat. And
yeah,
2005, as many like accomplishments that I had individually, the next year, 2006, was like just as good of a year team-wise. And it was a completely different experience because now the World Championships that year was the first one where you have to qualify as a team to move on to the next year, with the next year's World Championships.
Mm.
And being a part of that team, we were, we placed the highest that Team Canada has ever placed at a World Championship. So wow, that was pretty cool. And we went, we competed. It was in Denmark in a city called Aarhus. And again, I don't know why all these competitions happen in small towns. It would have been nice to go to a lot more larger cities. But for whatever reason, these competitions always seem to be in the tiniest towns. And our hotel was next to this. There wasn't really much around. There was a gas station. And all I, one of the main memories I have is just eating so many gas station hot dogs throughout that trip. Like, I don't know what it was, but like not much was going on. And
were they at least good hot dogs though?
They were cheap, and you know, when you're only, you know, 20 years old and you don't have a lot of money, you're gonna, we received some money at each competition for food and stuff, but being cheap young athletes, we would try and save as much as we could, so when we went home we had a little extra money, so we would eat as crappy as we could just so we could leave the trip with a little bit of money. But yeah, so we competed. We were in the qualifications. We were fifth, and you had to be top eight to make the team finals. And Canada had never made the team finals. And so that was a pretty cool, pretty big accomplishment. And then with sport, I had mentioned that, you know, it can get political. And we had one of our top athletes in Canada retired briefly in 2006, and he went to try out for Cirque du Soleil.
Oh, wow.
And unfortunately at the time, he didn't get put into a show. So right before the World Championships, he came back and he started training again. And he got to a point where he didn't get to a level high enough to be named to be part of the team, but he was part of the, or he was named as the alternate to be on the team. So he went with us to the competition, and he was there in case somebody got injured. And after we qualified to the team finals, his coach, he also had one or two other athletes on the team at the time. He tried convincing the head coach to switch, his name was Grant, who was the alternate, for myself. And I don't know what the reason was. I don't know if he legitimately thought that Grant maybe gave the team a better chance at placing higher, or if he was just doing it purely just because it was his athlete. But for whatever reason, for the next few days, he was doing his damnedest to try and switch him for me throughout, or for that competition. And it was creating a lot of turmoil tension within the team. So, and then in the end, the only way an alternate could have been switched was if there was an injury. So he caused so much trouble, and then in the end he wasn't even allowed to do it anyways. So I mean, a lot of people were kind of upset, well, were very upset with him. And, I was happy that, as ridiculous as it was, that I got to stay and compete in the team finals. And, we did great. We dropped a spot, but we finished sixth, which is still remarkable looking back at it. And it was such a fun experience because all my other real experiences, you're going out, you're competing for yourself, but in that competition, we were there as a team, competing as a team. Nobody was competing for themselves, really. And it was just such a fun experience to be a part of.
Yeah,
So that was pretty cool.
definitely. Yeah, I'm sure all those experiences are so surreal, being on such big stages in the world and competing with Canada on your back or your front and with a lot of the world really watching you and stuff like that, right? So that must have been really surreal. Yeah,
It
but
was. And
yeah.
then leading up to our, I mean, the leading up to the Olympics, this was 2007 was the big year in which Canada would qualify to the Olympics. And coming off 2006, where we had such a or so much success as a team, finishing sixth, we only had to be top 12 to qualify to the Olympics in Beijing. So we were feeling really confident with our spot in the world.
Yeah.
And then 2007, we had some ex unexpected injuries, and it was crazy because two of our top guys went down with injuries that year. Our best all-rounder, who does all six events, his name is Adam Wong, tore his Achilles earlier
Oh.
in the year. So he was out for the whole year. And then we went to the World Championships. And then in the training, Kyle Schufelt, who was the Olympic champion, who had been on all our teams leading up to that point, fractured both his knees in training. So he was out. And now
Yeah.
we had our alternate come in and join the team, and his name's Casey Sandy. And, two of our top guys were not part of this team anymore. So, I don't even know if we were really still that concerned about not making the top 12. We just knew that we had to go out, and if we didn't have any mistakes, we still had a pretty good shot at making the top 12.
Yeah.
And, competition came. We all did super well, and we finished in 11th. So we qualified to the Olympics, missing two of our best guys. And at that moment, it was like, I might actually be going to the Olympics. So it was quite like, it was so amazing being there and experiencing that with the guys.
Yeah.
And yeah, and that kind of led me to, the Olympics, where that was an experience all in itself right there.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I feel like this is a perfect segue now to go on. You talked about all your previous competitions and the big competitions and all that. And I feel like this is a good time to segue into the Olympics and the biggest stage of them all. Only so many athletes in the world could, say that they even had a shot at, being, looked at for the Olympics. And you did it all basically in the sport. You made it to the highest stage ever. So what was kind of, the feelings leading up to knowing, that you were on the team now and you guys qualified and you were going into this, into the Olympics in 2008?
So in 2007, although we qualified as a team, we still had competitions throughout 2008 within Canada to determine who that final team would be. So probably a month before the Olympics was when the team was actually finalized. And the last training camp slash competition slash trials that we had was in Calgary. And being finally named as one of the six members of that team in that moment was just like a giant weight coming off my back. And just, there wasn't, it was never 100% certain that I was going to the Olympics until that moment.
Yeah.
So hearing my name called, I just, was able to relax and finally start to just, it was only a month away now, the competition. So there wasn't even a lot of time to really, think about it. And, it was just, yes, I'm super excited to go, but now I have to focus even harder over the next month because I want to make finals and I want to have a chance at that Olympic medal, right?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, definitely this is something that's is so crazy, and especially, for any athlete, obviously, making it to the Olympics is the best thing you could imagine, in an athlete's point of view. But, for you especially, Brandon, you told me in the beginning how your grandmother, she found your journal and remembered you, in grade one, writing that you were going to the Olympics and stuff like that. So, since you were so young, you were really, thinking about the Olympics, and to finally be there, that must have been, something that could only happen in dreams, really, but it did happen, right?
It did. And, I'm sure my grandmother was, more proud than I was even in that moment and being there. And, it's especially when you're younger, it's hard to really understand just how amazing experiences and things are in the moment until you look back years later and you really reflect and you can really, see like just how amazing what you did was. And
yeah,
I mean, with the Olympics, yes, it was my dream. I've had a great career up until that point. So even if I didn't go to the Olympics, I had done some amazing things. And, right. It all led to this moment. And then, looking for that fairy tale ending, I went into the Olympics like thinking I was going to challenge for a medal. And before the competition, I suffered a huge injury to my ankle, and I almost didn't even get the chance to compete when I went there. So
wow.
it was yeah, quite the experience. So I went from, getting to the village, which in itself was quite the experience. You fly in, it takes forever. You get shuttled into this large facility where they give you your accreditations and they do their ID checks, and then you get allowed into the athlete's village. And yeah, there you have to go find your apartment. Then you have to go to the clothing building where they give you your Team Canada outfits. And so just that day of going into the village and stuff, there is just like, you're so busy, like it's hard to really, be able to take anything in that day. But over the next few days, walking around the village and going to eat and like the communal athlete dining area, and seeing all these athletes from all these other sports there. And like, I saw Kobe Bryant and,
no way,
Michael Phelps, Usain Bolt, wow, like all these crazy athletes. And I'm just some small gymnast who of course they wouldn't have any idea about, but like, it was pretty cool. And though, just the difference in what athletes like statures and look like, and it, like, wasn't more evident than in the dining hall where McDonald's was an Olympic sponsor. So we have our dining area. It was basically like just kiosks of like different areas throughout the world. They had different cuisines, but because McDonald's was a sponsor, there was a mini McDonald's in the dining hall as well. So oh, yeah, you could go, and everything was free. So you just go and ask for, awesome, whatever you want. And I remember sitting near weightlifters, and this guy had like 5 Big Macs on his tray, and he was just, pounding back these calories. And I just found that so amazing that, well, I mean, whatever I was eating, but like this guy was just like eating like that, and he was still, you know, probably one of the best in his sport, but it was pretty funny.
Definitely, so, yeah.
So how it worked with gymnastics too. Gymnastics was a competition that happened really early on in the Olympics. So we were one of the first sports to compete. And we got to the Olympic Village, I think 10 days, maybe 2 weeks before the actual competition. So we were there well before everybody else. And then training and going through our practices every day. 5 days before the competition, we had a routine day where we had to show the head coach all our routines. And the floor was my last event of the training session, and I was doing a floor routine. And being one of the most difficult routines I ever done, because, you know, I was trying to compete for a medal at the Olympics. Yeah. I was tired. My last tumbling line, I landed really short, and I landed really bad on my ankle. And to this day, it was probably one of the worst pains that I've had, like, from anything. So
yeah,
I landed bad. Everybody didn't know what to do, so they took me to the hospital. I had an MRI done on the spot, and I don't know how, but the doctors told our coaches that they didn't see anything too serious with, you know, with my ankle. So wow. You know, right there, that was, you know, great to hear. So then I went back to the village. Again, this was 5 days before the competition. And over the next 2 days, I spent probably 20 or almost 20 hours a day in the physio room, like icing, resting, doing everything, compressing, like all the treatments, everything I could to try and get the swelling down, get my ankle feeling better within the next couple of days. And then a couple of days later, I want to say it was 2 days, no, 3 days before the competition, we had another training session, and the head coach told me that I had to go out and show him enough on each event that he felt comfortable that I could still compete, and he wouldn't have to change me or switch me out with the alternate. Yeah. So now, you know, all the pressure was on. All this could, like, and all this happened, and I might not even be able to compete. So
yeah,
I went to the doctor. I said, you know, my ankle is quite sore, and what can we do to try and get me through this training session? And he, you know, he came up with a way to tape my ankle, and he said, you know, we can inject your leg with freezing so you don't feel the pain. So I said, wow. All right, we'll do what I got to do. And then, so I go to this training session and I see the doctor. He injects my foot with freezing and tapes my foot up, and I go start warming up on the floor. And like, I've never had this before. So this, and with gymnastics, I mean, you rely so much on your sense of touch, on your feel of the equipment, right?
Yeah.
And I'm going on the floor, and my right foot, like, or my left foot, you know, it's been so many years. Yeah, my left foot, yeah. I didn't feel anything. So I'm hopping around. I start warming up on the floor, and I start doing some basic tumbling. And because I don't feel anything in my foot, I misjudged a takeoff, and I landed really bad again on the floor.
Oh, no.
In front of everybody. And because I didn't feel anything, you know, like, I'm like, oh, geez, whatever. But I'm pretty sure, you know, something bad happened there too. But anyways, I went through the training session. I somehow showed the head coach enough that he said, you know, okay, that's enough for today. You're okay. We're going to keep you on. So then I was like, so happy again, like this roller coaster of emotions, like, you know.
Yeah.
I'm on the team, I'm off the team, I'm on the team, I'm off the team, right? So then over the next day, again, I'm in the physio room treating myself and really, over the next couple of days, I didn't do much on my ankle. It was better, like, try and let it heal as much as I can, and then, I'll be as good as I can be for the competition. So the competition day came, and how it works with gymnastics is the competition, everybody has an hour and a half where they go out and they warm up all the events. And then once that hour and a half warm up is over, the team is marched out and everybody gets one warm up turn on the event, and then they have to compete in front of the judges. So I go through my little routine with the doctor. He injects my foot, he tapes my foot, and I go for the hour and a half warm up. And I start warming up, and like the freezing didn't do anything. Like I s still felt like all this pain in my ankle. So then I went back to the doctor and he injected my foot again with more freezing. And now, like, my leg was numb all the way up to my knee. So it was something. Like every step that I took, I couldn't feel anything, but I could feel like the crunching, if that makes sense. Like just
Oh
something
my God.
crunching. So I go through the hour and a half warm up, then we get marched out for the competition. And because I didn't compete on the rings, we started on the rings. So I had that event as a break, and then the next event was the vault. And the vault is basically you run 25 meters, jump on a springboard, launch yourself off the vaulting table, and you do as big of a skill as you can. And I remember competing on the vault, and I have this correlation with like Forrest Gump, like I don't know, just limping my way down the runway, running as fast as I can, but not really running because my one leg was not really, I don't know, generating any power. And I landed terribly, but I somehow landed on my feet. But I think I took a couple steps sideways and went off the vaulting mat, but I landed it. So I made it through the first event, and then the next event was the parallel bars, and I was, national champion on the P bars. My parallel bars was a pretty good routine, and my P bars routine was probably one of the better routines that I'd ever done up until the dismount, where I landed and my legs basically gave out and my knees touched the ground, so it counted as a fall. So, while it was a good routine, I received a large error because of the fall on the landing. So that was disappointing. Then I went to the high bar. The high bar was next, and after the high bar was the floor. So the head coach made the decision to have me not do high bar. He told me, "You know what? We don't really need you for high bar. We need you to rest and be ready for the floor." And so I said,
Were you
"Okay, that's
nervous
all right."
to go do the floor after or
Oh, I was so nervous.
no?
I was like, nothing was going right really up until that point. And I knew, there was so much pressure on me to do like a good routine on floor. So floor comes, and I mean, my floor routine was stacked. Like it was as hard of a routine as you can do. And so I salute the judge, I go on the floor, and my first tumbling pass included four flips in a row. So I would do one flip, bounce into a second, bounce into the third, and then bounce into a fourth skill, all in a row. And landing the third skill, taking off for the fourth skill, I rolled my ankle. And I took off on my foot sideways, and I felt another huge crunch in my ankle as I landed my fourth skill in the corner of the floor. And the thing was, I felt like, something even worse happened to my ankle, but with all the freezing in my leg, I didn't feel any pain. So then it was hard to assess,
She
how
should
bad it
stop
actually
her.
was, right? So then I thought to myself in the corner, like time ticking, like so slowly that the next tumbling line in my routine involved two flips in the air with two twists. And that is one of the hardest skills you could do on the floor exercise at the time.
Yeah.
And I knew that, and this is happening real time, and it's going through my head so quickly that, I just screwed up my ankle even worse than it was, which was, horrible.
Oh,
So
so
then
you
I
still
made
went
that
for it?
decision. No, I made the decision in the corner to just stop my routine, walk off the floor, and be done with it. And that was, one of the hardest decisions, because up until that point, the MRI in China at the time said, they didn't see anything too serious. The next
Yeah.
day after the MRI, I kind of had that bad landing in the training session. I just had this other bad landing doing my floor routine leading up to this. So I didn't really know what was wrong with my ankle. So I went off. I didn't compete on the floor any further, so I didn't help the team there.
Yeah.
I competed on the final event, which was the pommel horse, but at that point, it didn't matter anymore. And, it was really hard having, your Olympic competition turn out like that, right? And
Right,
I
yeah.
was, I was pretty disappointed, but I'm also a realist too, where it was like, that's what happened. There's nothing I can do about it. But, I think it was harder, not so much for myself, but like, I also affected the team score, right? So it was hard knowing that, I didn't really help the team do better
Yeah.
during the competition. So,
You must have
but
felt like a burden that you had to carry after that or something, right?
I felt bad. The head coach, the coaches, they had every opportunity to take me off the team, and I had a really good conversation with the head coach during a breakfast. I don't know if it was the following day or the day after, but he said, everything I went through up until that point, and then that training session where he said I had to show him enough to stay on the team. He
Yeah.
said, no matter how I looked, just everything I did up until that point, he just couldn't take me off the team. He felt
Yeah.
I deserved to be there.
Oh.
So, that was really nice to hear. And, of course, at the time, you didn't know it was going to turn out as poorly as it did, but, So for what it's worth, that definitely made me feel a lot better. And all the guys were super supportive. Other guys have had injuries. You can't pick when those injuries come. And
Yeah.
so and then I got to experience the rest of the time at the Olympics in the village. I had a cast on, and they gave me a little bike to ride around on. But then after a
Oh.
while, I think I had the cast cut off because, I'd just rather be on crutches and get around and then worry about it when I got home. So,
Yeah.
I got to see some cool things. I got to see Usain Bolt win his first gold medal in the 100
That's
meters
amazing.
live. So that was pretty cool. We watched volleyball and baseball. So, it was a pretty cool experience. And then,
Definitely.
coming home and seeing everybody and, going to the doctor was a big moment because I had to go see a doc the doctor when I came back, and I had another MRI done, and this time the doctor told me that I had two fractures, two torn ligaments, bone chips. Like, there was a lot wrong with my foot and my ankle at like when I came home. So I got
Yeah.
to, that was like a load off. I got to look at that and be like, okay, so there was actually something wrong. I wasn't making this up. I wasn't being a
Right.
baby, So, yeah. So
Yeah.
that was my Olympic experience right there.
Yeah, I'm first off, I'm really sorry, that was what happened, at your Olympics, but I'm glad to hear that the team was supportive and the coach supported you in your decision and all that, and when you decided, you know, to stop the routine and stuff, and you know, it makes a lot of sense, because honestly, you know, that takes a lot of, you know, determination and drive and strength that not many people, you know, would have to first off, you know, be able to make something as big as the Olympics, you know, but then secondly, power through, you know, all those routines and, you know, keep freezing and, you know, not having any feeling, you know, really in your legs and knowing that there was a problem, but continuing for the team and, you know, for everybody else watching and for yourself, you know, first and foremost. But, you know, it's still definitely, you still have that experience, and that's still there. So, yeah.
And I think, well, everybody knew there was something wrong, because, I mean, maybe the test didn't say so while I was at the Olympics, but my leg was black and blue up to my knee. So,
Oh my gosh.
There was a lot of swelling and bruising going on. And I remember getting the looks from these other competitors just because, like, you know, what my leg looks like, and I'm out there doing what I'm doing. So
that's crazy.
And I mentioned, you know, it's funny talking with teammates after the fact and coaches after the fact. And I mentioned how the head coach told me that, you know, he wanted to keep me on the team because of, you know, everything I had done. And then hearing stories after the fact where the alternate at the time, his name's Ken, he was receiving calls daily that, you know, it's like, Brandon's injured, you're going to have to be ready to come in. Okay, just wait for the call and stuff like that. And, you know, the call never came, but wow. He told me about how, like, stressful it was, like, just not knowing either, just being like, hearing that he might have to replace me, he might not. And he was actually a pretty big advocate of letting me compete as well. He's like, you know what? Let him compete. Like, you know,
that's awesome.
I'm not really ready myself. I haven't been training and stuff like that. But, you know.
Yeah, that must have been nerve-wracking, you know, for him too. But it's good to know that, you know, he wanted you to kind of have that opportunity, since, you know, you really put in that effort over all those mm-hmm. years, you know, to come to that point.
Yeah. So, you know, there was that, and then, you know, the Olympics happened, and it was everything you trained for, and then I get home, and then it was over. So then it was kind of like, what do I do next, right?
Yeah.
And so I had to, like, really think long and hard about, do I want to stay in the sport? You know, I competed, you know, my whole life, and, you know, I didn't really have the experience that I wanted at the Olympics, but, you know, I went to the Olympics, so, you know, I did achieve my dream. Like, should I move on with my life at that point?
Yeah.
So that was, you know, it was a tough kind of transition at the time, and trying to figure out what route I wanted to go over the next, you know, stage of my life.
Yeah. How did life kind of change before, or how was life kind of like, you know, for Brandon O'Neill before and after the Olympics, you know, even with the injury and everything, you know, how were things for you?
Oh, you know, I was living on, you know, prior to the Olympics, you know, I was living on my own, doing my thing. I wasn't going to school. I was just training full time. So really, you know, my world again was just gymnastics, and I was traveling a lot. So, you know, out of the 12 months, I was probably gone for at least, you know, 3 or 4 months out of that whole year, kind of split up through chunks. So I'd be gone for a couple of weeks, I'd be home for a couple of weeks, I'd be gone. So, you know, I was always quite busy with gym. And then, you know, after the Olympics, I got married with my first wife at the time. And at that time, you know, she was really pushing me towards, like, you know, stopping gym and then pursuing, you know, a career. And I put a lot of thought into it as well, until one day I was approached by a local guy. He had his daughter in gymnastics, and he owned his own business. And he came up to me saying that he wanted to sponsor me to keep going. And I, you know, I was shocked because, first of all, amateur sport athletes getting sponsored by anybody is very, very rare. Like, it's usually only professional athletes. And, you know, he was willing to provide me with enough income that, you know, the average person would be making working full time. And
that's amazing.
So it was like a once in a lifetime opportunity. And, you know, it was tough because, you know, I was kind of being pulled like into like quitting gym, and then this sudden switch to like stay in gym and commit for another 4 years. Like, it was, you know, it was tough at the time, but I realized, you know, I still had a lot left in the sport, and I wanted, you know, I wanted another chance to go to the Olympics.
Yeah. And you didn't end up, unfortunately, you know, making it to the 2012 Olympics, right?
No. So the next 4 years, I mean, it was a complete different experience. Up until the Olympics, I was pretty fortunate with not really having any serious injuries. And then after the Olympics, or counting the Olympics, I mean, from then on, I had quite a few injuries. So 2008 Olympics, I broke my ankle. 2010 training, so I was sponsored at the time. I was training as a full-time athlete. There were some stresses involved with, you know, this guy obviously wanted me to achieve a certain level of success, right? Because, you know, he was paying me to do the sport.
Yeah.
And he was kind of in it to garner some publicity as well. So if you're not doing well, then you're not going to be on the news. You're not going to get his name out there. So, you know, there was some pressure there. And then in 2010, I had a bad landing and I tore my ACL. Oh. And if anybody knows anything about those types of injuries, it's a long recovery. So as soon as that happened and I found out, you know, it's a, you know, 8 to 10 month recovery from that before competing again, I had to go to my sponsor and, you know, break the bad news that, you know, I got injured, you know, this is what the situation is. And he was great. He said, you know what, we're behind you, we'll keep paying you, just heal yourself, get better, and, you know, go from there. So,
that's awesome.
You know, that was great. So I came back from the ACL tear, I went to the Worlds the next year, and then made it to the World Championships in 2011, and that was a big World Championships because that's where we had to qualify for the Olympics the following year.
Right.
And this time, instead of being the top 12 teams qualify, it was only the top 8 qualify at that time. And then the following 8 teams would have to compete again a few months later at another selection event. So we placed 12th at the time. So in any other previous Olympic cycle, we would have qualified to the Olympics. But this time we had to move on to this other selection meet. And from there, you know, it was completely different because I was much older, you know, as the I've had injuries as the body, as I was getting older, you know, the body didn't feel as good as I did when I was younger. So, and then I had the stresses of, you know, this job in a way where I had certain commitments, and if I didn't perform well, then, you know, my funding was held over my head. So, and then, you know, my relationship with my wife was a little rocky at the time. So, you know, there were so many different mental factors going into this like stage of my career than I had in my previous or prior to the other Olympics. So then the Olympic trials came and we ended up placing 13th out of the 12 teams. So we just missed qualifying to the London Olympics. So it was, you know, obviously pretty disappointing. And then from that time on, because, you know, I wasn't going to the Olympics, you know, my contract with my sponsor came to an end, and I was already prepared for this. But, you know, that was kind of the moment where, I moved into working full time, and although I stayed in the sport a little longer, I eventually retired because of another knee injury that I suffered. But it was kind of a slow descent after that 2010 injury to, my retirement. But, I had a lot of great experiences, throughout those years, but unfortunately, injuries played a big part of it.
Yeah. Well, hey, you did. Like I said many times, in this episode, you did what only so many people around the world could really dream of doing. And even if the outcome wasn't, what you anticipated or hoped for, you still did it. And but I guess, now so you retired in 2013, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So with I guess now we finished talking about your childhood and your upbringing and, gymnastics, your career. I guess finally I want to just move into what happened, after gymnastics in 2013, what are you doing now? That type of stuff.
Yeah, so in 2012, I was still competing, but I started in 2012 coaching full-time at the gymnastics club that we're currently part of, which is Ortona Gymnastics in Edmonton. And, I fell into it because, one, I had so much experience in gymnastics, and I really enjoyed, teaching and passing on my knowledge and everything to the next generation. So for years, I coach, and I coach to this day. But in 2014, I met my current wife, and she became a huge influence in me over the years as well. And she's super intelligent. She started her own business. We started a business together as well, selling beauty products, and just over the last couple years, turning into a businessman as well has been, quite an interesting change in, my life, and it's really exciting.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And shout out to your wife. Wait, her name is Sina, right?
Sina, yes.
Yeah, look at that. My memory, it's up there. No.
Yeah. But, she's, almost the complete opposite of me. She's so well educated. She has all these degrees. She's, done all these things. And, it's crazy that polar opposites can come together. And, like I said, she's made me a better person for sure. And venturing into the business world has been largely due to her, but, she keeps pushing me, and I'm very thankful for that.
That's amazing. I'm happy for you, that you found the right one, and the one that, pushes you to be better. And, when if she ends up listening, to the episode, hopefully, she'll hear this part. And yeah.
Yeah, I'll get her to fast forward.
Yeah, just be like, no, I'm kidding. Don't listen to the rest. Just listen to this part, where I said all these nice things about you.
Yeah, earn me some brownie points for sure.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I don't know what that saying is. It's like opposites attract, right? So that's
the
real example.
My first wife and I were opposites as well, but I think, there are certain traits that, you align with an individual, and you can be opposites in many, many aspects, but there are certain core traits that I think you need to share, and ideologies and stuff like that. And I think my wife and I certainly do.
Yeah. Definitely. I agree there. There has to be some core values kind of that pull you to that person and that you guys have in common. But
I think I was, you know, I was very young at the time too, I think, with my first relationship. So I think being a little older, a little wiser, you learn as you get older, you know, what you want, and you know, you can understand how to do things a little bit better and how to treat people, and you know, just everything comes with age.
Yeah, definitely. So I guess, you know, we can talk about your wife and yours' business, you know, a little bit. And you guys can, you know, tell us about how it started, you know, what the experience has been like and all that.
Yeah, so my wife has her MBA. She has degrees in genetics and like comes from a science background. And when I met her, she was working as a pharmaceutical sales rep here in Edmonton. So again, how our paths crossed is a funny story, because we were both working part-time jobs at the time, and we were doing, and we just came across each other, and like, it's just funny how like our paths would never have met otherwise. And then, you know, we went out and we just hit it off, and you know, we're inseparable since. And then that's working amazing. As a pharmaceutical sales rep over the years, she always had this dream of opening her own business, and she had all these plans of doing it. And she noticed in Edmonton that there weren't any, because she's from Toronto, first of all, and in Toronto there's a lot of hair waxing salons. They call them wax bars. And in Edmonton, there aren't any. So she thought she found like a hole in the market, right? And she thought she could introduce something from that's really popular out east here in Alberta. And so, you know, she came to me with this idea of starting her business. And I said, you know, just passing, you know, we still have the house, but I had the house by myself at the time. And I said, you know, well, if you want to start waxing people on the side, you can always use a room in my house. And, you know, I didn't really mean anything of it. And she took it and ran with it. She's like, okay, sure.
So she held you to it.
Yeah, for sure. And so she started this little business on the side, waxing out of my place. And then she eventually rented an apartment and started doing it out of her apartment. And then she moved up to renting a room out of a salon. And this was all while she was still a pharmaceutical sales rep. And then she eventually got to a point where she was making enough that she could walk away from her sales rep job and open a storefront. And from there, you know, she's taken off. She has two locations now, and the store is called Buff Wax Spot. And it is probably now, it's one of those businesses in Edmonton that, you know, people know and think of, that's, you know, Edmonton based and is a real success story. So she's done a remarkable job, like, you know, bringing her dream in that aspect to life. And dealing with people on a daily basis, she realized that, you know, dealing with skin, there were so many skin issues that people had, and all the products that she could find to put in her shop, nothing was really solving these skin issues. So she said, she came to me and said, you know what, I want to create my own skincare brand and target all these issues that I see in people on a daily basis. And so that's how our cosmetic beauty brand was created. I worked with her. I deal with all the logistics, and she deals with all the formulations and all that, all the science-based stuff. And from there, we've been a business for a couple years, and we've slowly been growing and, you know, garnering traction. So it's been pretty cool.
Yeah, that's actually really, really cool, definitely. You know how, especially in a place like Edmonton, you guys started a business and it took off, and now it's like a household name, in Edmonton. And it's black owned too, right? Like half black owned, right? So
Well,
that's
her
another.
the Buff Wax Spot is fully owned by her, so that's a black owned brand, and then our business, and then our cosmetic business. I mean, yeah, we're co-owners, so definitely. But yeah, no, it's been really great to see her do what she's done. And her parents were refugees coming to Canada, and they basically started from nothing as well when they moved to Canada. And I know it was really important for her to, be a success. And she's
Yeah.
just, done such a great job, and she gives back to the community. And, as we grow, I mean, that is definitely something we look to do more of in the future too.
That's really beautiful, and that she was able to pave her own path regardless of circumstances. And another thing that's really beautiful, is how you talk so well about her. Clearly you're a good husband, and you guys are good for each other. So yeah.
Well,
So
she's standing right beside me and threatening to hit me if I don't, so.
yeah.
No, I'm joking, but.
No, but yeah. Honestly, I guess last thing before we finish off, where can people find you and your business, and if they wanna keep up with your future goals and plans, where can they do that?
Yeah, our business is called Buff Experts, and you can catch us at Buff, so BUFF experts.com, and Instagram, we're at Buff Experts, and you can just follow along. We sell body care products, so from the neck down, and we're just high quality plant-based ingredients that, really work to treat your skin problems, so from the neck down. And my wife's wax bar is called Buff Wax Spot in Edmonton, buffwaxspot.com, so you can check her business out as well. And yeah.
Definitely, yeah. Make sure you all check out all their companies and follow them on their social media. And I will also
And of
have
course, oh, sorry. And of course, we are, if you're interested in gymnastics and in the Edmonton area, you can catch me and Bilal at the Ortona Gymnastics Club.
Absolutely, yeah, you can't forget that shout out, Ortona. Such a great place. Yeah, so definitely you can find Brandon there, and if you're interested in looking into gymnastics. And I will have all the links in the show notes to Brandon and Sina's businesses and all that, along with Ortona, if you guys want to check that out. And yeah, and maybe I'll have a few links of some of Brandon's few videos that are up of him doing some crazy routines, so you guys could check that out too. And yeah, thank you so much, Brandon, honestly, for taking this time and sitting with me. It was such a great honor.
Oh, well, thanks for having me, Bilal.
For sure, for sure. Thank you all for listening this week. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and I hope you got something out of it. And don't forget to rate the podcast on Apple Podcasts and or Podchaser 5 stars. And follow the podcast on Instagram, Podcast with Bilal. And yeah, I'll hope you all take care, and I'll catch you on the next one. All right, peace.